There is a real disaster in the Trump political bank account. We're going to talk about that in just a moment. But first, is this something like what you see on fire alarms? In case of fire, break glass. Here, in case of campaign disaster, is Speaker Paul Ryan telling GOP convention delegates quietly, read between the lines here, to break the glass and vote their consciences? He kind of made it clear on Meet the Press on Sunday that he wouldn't be standing in the way of anyone's crisis of conscience about Donald Trump or anyone else.
The last thing I would do is tell anybody to do something that's contrary to their conscience. So it is not my job to tell delegates what to do, what not to do, or to weigh in on things like that. They write the rules. They make their decisions. All I want to make sure is it's done above board, clearly, honestly, and by the rules.
By the rules, above board, and indeed rules for the GOP convention would have to be changed for delegates to vote anything other than what they're pledged to do, but could happen. With me now to discuss the strategy of the Vote Your Conscience initiative is Regina Thompson, a Republican delegate in Colorado and one of the co-founders of Free the Delegates. Welcome, Regina.
Thank you for having me.
Free the Delegates. It sounds like, freedom now, freedom now.
Well, you know, everyone needs a jingle.
Do you? Exactly. That's what this hour is about. You should stay with us. So do you feel unfree? Do you want to be able to do something that you're not permitted to do right now?
Well, for myself personally, no. My understanding is that since the first convention of the Republican Party, other than one in 1976, that the delegates have always been free to vote their conscience, and they've had, for the most part, their votes faithfully recorded as cast. Our contention is that that holds true today, that there is nothing within the rules today that precludes delegates from actually voting their conscience. Now, many delegates don't understand that. They're afraid to do it because they've got their state GOPs telling them otherwise. They've got state bylaws that were written differently, but our contention is that they are already free. I feel no bounds myself, but I'm working to, help the others understand the same thing.
Now, let's talk about what the enforcement mechanism would be here. You're a delegate from Colorado, right?
Correct.
Who's the head of your delegation?
Well, the head of our delegation is our state party chair, Steve House.
Okay, so Steve House, probably a wonderful fellow. If you were to vote differently from what you're pledged to do, as far as you can tell, the only punishment there is he would give you a very nasty look on camera that everyone would see around the nation, but that your vote would be recorded, and that would have to be the case.
Well, yes, and we in Colorado, that's not an issue for us. Every one of our delegates here were elected from a Cruz slate, and every delegate, in order to be on that slate, pledged to the campaign itself that they would vote for Senator Cruz on every ballot until the campaign told them otherwise. So for us in Colorado, they're bound to, by honor, to vote for a candidate, in order to be on the slate. Now, if any one of them chooses to vote for another candidate on the first, on the first ballot, then I would, honor that as their right to do so. But I personally, I would, have a talk with them about honor in pledging to do something else to the campaign and then, voting otherwise. But there's no retribution in Colorado that could be done to those folks.
What about other states?
Well, in other states, there are some states, such as North Carolina, has forced their delegates to sign a pledge that tells them that if they basically dishonor their pledge or embarrass the Republican Party, that they could be barred from participating in the party for up to 10 years. They could face a $10,000 fine and have their credentials pulled at the convention. And so for those delegates, who are wanting to vote their conscience, this is, that's very, very heavy-handed threats against them. I'm not sure what will happen. There's a lot of them looking at various options. They're talking to attorneys to find out if this is really something legitimate because it's threatening for them. That's a lot of money and a lot of time to be barred from participation.
Could you get a majority of the Rules Committee to say, look, whatever you want to vote, that's fine. We'll deal with it on the floor?
Well, that's what one of my colleagues here in Colorado who's on the Rules Committee, she is introducing a conscience clause. If it gets out of the Rules Committee, and then that's her task is, talking to other delegates that are on the Rules Committee to get that passed, and then it would go to the convention floor. Our thought is that particular clause, although we still think we're unbound, that would give those delegates who are afraid, who don't believe it, or who just want something solid and writing, you know, once that passes, then they can say to their delegation, you know, see, I really have permission to vote my conscience. And that's the purpose of that clause. It's to give that permission slip to those doubting and fearful delegates.
How many, before we go, in just a couple seconds, how many delegates do you think would actually vote their conscience if you could put them down on a piece of paper and say, here, look, so, this is how many I have,
I think that when we get there, other than those that are already free to vote for a candidate other than Mr. Trump, I think we're going to see 300 or 400 that will take that step and actually vote their conscience.
Regina Thompson is a Republican Colorado delegate and co-founder of Free the Delegates. Thank you, Regina.
Thank you.
Monday night was the monthly Federal Election Commission deadline for presidential campaigns to report their finances, and the news from Donald Trump is a disaster. Unless your issue is getting money out of presidential politics, money, basically Trump has none. $2 million in cash on hand compared to Hillary Clinton's $30 million in April, and now that has shrunk to only $1.3 million on the Trump side. And even now that Trump has joined forces with the RNC to raise money, he faces a huge goal, $1 billion, that Republican donors may or may not come forward with. And speaking at a rally over the weekend, Trump, of course, says Plan A is still Plan A.
Otherwise, I'll just keep doing what I'm doing. I'll just keep funding my own campaign. I'm okay with that. That's the easy way. I mean, for me, that's the easy way.
But there are major questions about whether he has the cash right now to do even close to that. Rebecca Ballhaus is a Wall Street Journal reporter covering politics and campaign finance. What does this look like now?
I think for now, what it reflects more than anything is just the pace at which Trump has set up a finance organization for himself. And he really took his time in May after he became the presumptive nominee. He said he was not going to self-fund his general election campaign. But he didn't really rush to assemble a finance team. He appointed a finance chairman. He made this joint fundraising deal with the RNC about halfway through the month. But it didn't really get off the ground. So, I mean, he's been holding a lot more fundraisers in June. We'll have to see how well those did. He spoke at a rally last weekend and said that he thought his fundraising tour through Texas last week raised about $13 or $15 million. But the fundraising strategy that he's pursuing is also one that just isn't going to raise that much money for his campaign.
All right. So there's some that we don't know here. But if we just sort of take these numbers as square one, what's the uphill here?
$1 billion is really the number that's most often talked about for what you need to raise for a general election campaign. He said in interviews also $500 million would be the number that he would be looking for. And of course, his campaign has also said that Trump is an unconventional candidate and that he may not need to raise as much money as other presidential candidates have had to. So it may be true that he needs less money than some candidates because of his public relations strategy. But at the same time, if he's going up against Hillary Clinton, who's raised about $240 million for her campaign and also has a super PAC that's raised about $87 million, he's just going to need to raise a sizable chunk of money if he wants to run TV ads, if he wants to have a grassroots operation in these battleground states. He said he wants to expand the map for Republicans, and there's no way to do that without raising money.
What if he's right? I mean, is it possible that he is right, that that kind of traditional money and traditional fundraising doesn't guarantee anything, and you only need to point to, you know, Jeb Bush, whose donors, you know, dumped $130 million into the incinerator?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think there is certainly some truth to it, and I think what Jeb Bush really showed was the lack of effectiveness of outside money, so super PAC specifically, because, as you say, he had this $100 million super PAC that really wasn't able to do anything. But I think that you do need to have money in your campaign because you need to be able to pay staffers and have a ground game operation. And I think you really need to be in these battleground states where you're going to be rivaling her campaign, which has had staffers on the ground for months. You need to be able to actually employ people.
Observe this throughout the campaign, this cycle of Trump says one thing and the media or someone else says, no, actually, the emperor has no clothes. There's, you know, not the business expertise. There's not the political support. There's, you know, in this case, there's not any financing. And then Trump, you know, doubles down and says, yeah, we're naked. That's our strategy. I mean, how striking is the contrast between these realities that you see in these numbers and what you feel and see at these rallies?
I mean, he's certainly always very upbeat at the rallies. You've seen him try and sort of dance around the issue of polling in the last couple rallies, I would say, because polls have showed that Hillary Clinton is starting to lead him by a larger and larger gap. And so he's sort of not really said that in rallies, but has said we'll catch up. And he certainly sounds very positive at these rallies. But I think when you talk to a lot of fundraisers, what they say is that at the rallies, he's really still addressing his primary audience. And they're worried that they feel like a lot of the people who go to these rallies are the same people going over and over again, and that he's not taking the pains to address a general election audience and to try and bring in new supporters. And I think that's what you see happening with these fundraising numbers. He's raised about $14 million in addition to his personal loans, and he seems to be struggling to find new donors to come help his effort.
Rebecca Ballhaus is a Wall Street Journal reporter covering politics and campaign financing. Thank you so much, Rebecca.
Thank you.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.